changing hands. Don't give up. This is 90.7 FM WGXE Aqua, Hudson Catskill, the station that everyone loves.
Network, this is the news. This is the network. This is the news. This is the network. Network.
I'm Tom Rowe, and you've tuned in to the WGXC Morning Show from ACRA. Today we will hear about the March 3rd rally, statewide day of action for marijuana justice in Albany with the Smart NY Coalition, Drug Policy Alliance, and others. They're calling on the legislature and Governor Andrew Cuomo to legalize cannabis by passing the Marijuana Regulation and Taxation Act. So we'll hear about their rally on March 3rd today on the WGXC Morning Show. Plus, we'll hear national headlines from the Public News Service, the Better Weather, and the Catskill Maker Syndicate, and more right after the local news this morning on the WGXC Morning Show.
This is the network. Network. This is the news. This is the network. This is the news. This is the network. Network. This is the news. This is the network. This is the news. This is the network. Network. And the moon turns to blood. A stream runs through. And the moon turns to blood. This is the network. Network. And the moon turns to blood. A stream runs through. And the moon turns to blood. This is the network. Network. This is the news. This is the network. This is the news. This is the network.
Listen to music and voices. Listen to work and play. Listen to eat and drink. Listen to noise and fun. Listen to pink and blue. Listen to a heart rainbow. Listen to wizards and witches. Listen to jazz play. Listen to dogs and mice. Listen to Rome and Italy. Listen to Mars and Venus. Listen to the planet. Listen to teeth and trunks. Listen to Kaizen and Violet. Listen to Stars and Stripes. Listen to Texas. Listen to bells and waterfalls. Listen to churches and steeples. Dance and sing and listen and bells. Listen to making things, stripes and zigzags. Bike riding and zigzagging. No, listen to bike riding and curving. Listen to the radio going on and on. Listen to the radio WGXC.
WGXE underwriting support is provided by Woodhouse Pizza in Greenville, New York. The restaurant is located on the grounds of the Woodhouse Lodge and offers takeout, dine-in, and outdoor seating. Open Friday and Saturday from 4:30 to 9 p.m. Expanded hours start soon. Information at thewoodhouselodge.com.
WGXE is made possible in part by the generous ongoing support of Marcus DeGrazia Acupuncture of Austerlitz, New York. WGXE's sustaining supporters are among the station's most dedicated listeners. They care deeply about creative community radio, and their investment helps to sustain WGXE as a public platform for information, experimentation, and engagement in Greene and Columbia counties. Become a WGXE sustaining supporter today. Go to wgxe.org and click donate. Thank you for your support.
You've tuned in to the WGXC News Update. Go to the WGXC Newsroom, wgxc.org, to find out more about any of these stories. I'm Tom Rowe in ACRA. Natasha Vaughn is reporting for Columbia Green Media that the Columbia County Department of Health March 5th reported the first confirmed case of the UK variant of COVID-19 in the county, according to Department of Health Director Jack Mabb. The UK variant of the virus has been determined to spread more easily than other variants, according to the U.S. Centers for Disease Control and Prevention. The Columbia County case was found through random testing by Wadsworth Center, the state laboratory in Albany. Quote, there are other positives around here. The state health department is sequencing the DNA to see if there is more of a cluster or if it's just a single person, unquote. Mab said. Not every COVID-19 test is screened for all strains of the virus, he said, adding it is likely Wadsworth Center randomly examines some of the tests for different strains. At present, the county has not reported any cases of the other variants of the virus, such as those first found in Brazil and South Africa. In Columbia County, 10,994 first doses of the COVID vaccine have been administered to residents, and 5,235 of those people have received their second dose of the vaccine, according to the state's COVID vaccine tracker website. In Greene County, 6,666 people have received the first dose of the vaccine, and 3,243 people have received both doses. Read more about this story at HudsonValley360.com. Bill Williams is reporting for Columbia Green Media that the state is looking into the alleged dumping of a 275-gallon heating oil tank into the Hudson River, Department of Environmental Conservation spokesperson Regina Willis said March 5th. The tank, found nearly empty with some sludge at the bottom, was located on the banks of the river about a quarter of a mile south of Cheviot Park in Germantown. The DEC was notified about the tank by Germantown town historian Tom Shannon. Around midweek, Shannon spotted oil stains on the road and along areas of the access path south of the park while walking. An area resident told Shannon he heard noises the night before and saw a small pickup truck taking a home heating oil tank down the road, across the railroad tracks, and then down the access path. The DEC successfully removed the tank without contaminating the river, and it will now be cut and cleaned for proper disposal, according to the department. Investigation into how the tank made it to the riverbank is ongoing, and the DEC is asking for that anyone with information call its law enforcement hotline at 1-844-332-3267. That's 1-844-332-3267. Read more about this story at HudsonValley360.com. Daily Freeman is reporting that the State Department of Environmental Conservation rangers were called to Cotterskill Falls and Hunter during the afternoon of March 5th in response to reports that a hiker had fallen from a steep, rocky trail. The 27-year-old female hiker, climbing to the top of a staircase at the falls, slipped on ice and slid to the bottom. She suffered a cut to the head and a wrist injury, a DEC spokesperson said. Rangers arrived on the scene at about 1:30 p.m. and were able to walk the hiker to safety by approximately 4:30 p.m. Read more about this story in the Daily Freeman. And Mid-Hudson News is reporting that the Riverkeeper Environmental Organization has filed an appeal with the U.S. Court of Appeals for the District of Columbia Circuit, challenging the Nuclear Regulatory Commission's approval of the Indian Point Nuclear Power Plant's license transfer to Holtec International without a public hearing. Riverkeeper Director of Legal Programs Richard Webster argues the commission violated federal law, regulations, and policy by not holding a hearing. Quote, Holtec would tell you that they can go ahead and do the transfer while the issue is under appeal. I think that we have the other opinion that no transfer should happen until the appeal is resolved, unquote, he said. Webster also notes there is the question of the continuing state process that remains open. He does not think that will be resolved before Indian Point in Buchanan, Westchester County, is permanently closed at the end of April. Read more about this story at MidHudsonNews.com. And read more about any of these stories in the WGXC newsroom at WGXC.org. The National Weather Service in Albany predicts Sunday should be mostly sunny with a high of 29 and a low around 11. Monday should also be sunny with a high of 37 and a low around 27. And Tuesday should also be sunny with a high near 50, a low around 29. You're listening to the radio, WGXC 90.7 FM, Acre, Catskill, Hudson. Radio for open ears.
Find out where the music takes you on the next Deep Threes when the final recording sessions of the Robert Honer Percussion Ensemble finally see the light of day. Plus the explosive orchestra sounds of the Dorf Sound Collective and Kamasi Washington. Deep Threes. Music beyond boundaries for a digital world.
Tune in to Deep Threes after the noon news on Monday at WGXC 90.7 FM.
WGXC is made possible in part by the generous ongoing support of Jenny Getty of Red Hook, New York. WGXC's sustaining supporters are among the station's most dedicated listeners. They care deeply about creative community radio, and their investment helps to sustain WGXC as a public platform for information, experimentation, and engagement in Greene and Columbia counties. Become a WGXC sustaining supporter today. Go to WGXC.org and click Donate. Thank you for your support.
Let's begin.
You have 5 seconds. 5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
Don't worry if you can't follow everything that is said. Now repeat.
Welcome, radio listeners. You're listening to Bound by Books Youth Radio on WGXC. 90.7 FM, Acre, Catskill, and Hudson. Listener-supported radio for open ears. I'm Emily. I'm the director of the Hudson Area Library, and I'm from Hudson.
My name is Mishuda. I'm 19 years old, and I'm from Hudson.
My name is Fatia, and I'm 7 years old, and I'm also from Hudson.
I'm Georgia. I live near Hudson, and I'm 10 years old.
And we're here every week talking about books.
Books we love, books we hate, bookish things.
And we're usually joined by our friends Lena and Amelia, but they could not make it today. But we hope they are getting in some good reading wherever they are. And so, yeah, we talk about books on Bound by Books. And we've been doing that for about 10 years, longer than Fatia has been alive. And I forget, how old did you say you were, Georgia?
10.
I forget.
Wait, what day did you start?
February 28th.
So I am 10 days older than the show.
And the station launched on the 26th. So the first time that youth voices were on WGXC airwaves was on February 26th, including Quinn, who was our first Bound by Books host. So that's cool. We just had a big celebration of 10 years of WGXC. Yay! Very exciting. But yeah, so we're going to talk about some books today. And maybe we'll start with Mishuda. We haven't heard from you in a while. It's good to see you again.
Yeah, it's good to see you too. So I have a poem. This poem is it's called One Art by Elizabeth Bishop. It's about the COVID-19 pandemic. And the art of losing isn't hard to master. So many things seem filled with the intent to be lost, that their loss is no disaster. Lost something every day except the fluster of lost door keys, the hour badly spent. The art of losing isn't hard to master. Then practice losing farther, losing faster, places and names, and where it was you meant to travel. None of these will bring disaster. I lost my mother's watch, and look, my last or next to last of three loved houses went. The art of losing isn't hard to master. I lost two cities, lovely ones, and vaster. Some realms I owned, two rivers, a continent. I missed them. It wasn't a disaster. Even losing you, the joking voice, a gesture I love. I shan't have lied. It's evident. The art of losing, not too hard to master. Though it may look like, write it, like disaster. So it's like I can feel it when slowly one by one our favorite places were losing. That's how I understood the poem was spoken to me. And it's I feel it never had happened to me, but the pandemic, it just created an aura of isolation where we are all forced to just, just stay in our home without going out. Yeah, it's and also today's a beautiful day, and it's you have to make a choice whether to go outside or not. Yeah, and it's right now, I remember 2 years ago, I would see a lot of people outside, kids playing, adults hanging out with other adults, and streets roaming with cars. And it's now it's a dead end. You don't see any. You don't hear people screaming. You don't hear people shouting or talking.
Yeah, it's a very different time. And we're just about on our 1-year anniversary of things really starting to shut down. It's amazing we've made it a whole year.
Just 10 more days. I keep track well.
I still remember like March 18, 2020. It was like the day where we were told that we were going on a vacation and we were going to come back. Like there's a just small virus here. And we're going to come back in 2 weeks. And then like we all had a hope, like we didn't say goodbye to our teachers or our friends, me being a senior, and then thinking we will all come back. Like it's like another winter break. And then it never happened.
Yeah, that was really, really hard on everyone, but especially the seniors like you and Amelia.
That's kind of the way that we thought of it. Like, we thought it was going to end soon, but boy, we were wrong. From 2 weeks to a few months to a year.
And some. Yeah, we had our last show on the radio, in the radio station, that we recorded on the Monday before the schools closed. So I guess the 16th. And it was me and Lena on that show. It was just Lena that day. And I was listening to that episode recently, and she says how she doesn't like her teacher because she gave too much homework for during this break from school. And I was like, well, you know, they just want you to make sure you're learning while you're not at school. They, you know, they care about your learning. And she was like, yeah, but we're only closed for 8 days. And then listening to that in retrospect, it's like, oh, that 8 days lasted a little bit longer.
So where did you record? I thought you recorded inside the library, but again, I wasn't there. Like, did you go to a special like recording studio or did you just record in the library?
We recorded in the WGXC Hudson studio, which was most recently in the basement of the First Presbyterian Church. And it had previously been at a different location, but it had been there for a little while. Yeah, we only recorded in the library occasionally. If we couldn't make it to our regular recording time, we would sometimes record at the library. And then for the Children's Book Festival episode, we would always record at the library or broadcast from the library. But yeah, I am really proud of our Bound by Books team for adjusting to the remote broadcast really quickly. Because we recorded our last episode that Monday before the schools and the library closed. And then by the next Monday, we were on Zoom recording our next show. So we didn't have any break in programming, which is really cool that you all were able to transition like that. You're champs. But yeah, I am hoping that once the weather gets a little bit nicer, we'll be able to get outside more.
I have a question.
Maybe we can figure out how to do a social distance picnic together.
The youngest age you can be on Bound by Books, like 5 days old.
You could be a baby. We'll have the first live birth Bound by Books episode.
I could have joined on the first Bound by Books. I would only be 10 days old. A week and 3 days.
I think Fatia might be the youngest co-host we've ever had. I think we may have had like a guest that came on that was like a sibling, but I don't know. Fatia might be the youngest. She's quite mature for her years.
Definitely. When I first saw her, I thought she was like 11 or something. I thought she is older than me.
Not yet. Great. Well, thank you for sharing that poem, Ashita. That was really nice. I missed your poem sharing. Georgia, do you want to share a book?
Why not?
Why not?
I have no idea why I did that wiggle, but it felt fun.
Good time.
So my book is called Spy School. It is by Stuart Gibbs. It is about a boy named Ben Ripley, who, well, I'll spoil the entire thing for you. I'll read the back of it to you. Agent Ben Ripley, age 12. Mission, survive the science school that really is a font for train junior CIA operatives and try to get the girl. Objectives, find the devious double agent who has infiltrated the school. 2, try not to die. 3, prove everyone that you are capable of being a spy, save the day, and try to not look like such a nerd while doing it. Destroy this note once you've memorized it. It's on a note form. It's really good. It's kind of action adventure. It's not really fantasy because there's no like magic or anything like that in it, but it's kind of like a adventure action. It's really fun.
I can't remember. Is that a series or is that a standalone?
I think it's a series. I'm really excited to read the others. That book, actually, my friend Molly, shout out to Molly. My friend Molly, she lent me that book because she, me, and another one of our friends, Mia, the three of us are kind of doing book swap where we just put out books that we have and we swap them. So it's kind of like a mini library during COVID, but it's only the three of us.
That's cool.
And Spy School is one of Molly's books. So once she comes back up from the city, I gotta return it to her. But
did you finish it yet?
Yeah. At first, at the beginning, I was like, this is so boring. I like forced myself to read it, as I always tell you guys. The longer you read, the more you'll get to the juicy part. There are some books that never have a juicy part. They're just long living boredom. But this one was not one of those. Once you got a little further in, it was impossible to put down. I was really at meals, like while my family was watching a movie, really anytime I could squeeze in. I was even reading my book while I was waiting for everybody to come in before school. Well, I mean, again, school hadn't started yet. I mean, everybody was still coming in. So yeah, I finally finished it, which is so nice. I would definitely recommend this book. It's a little violent. I'd recommend this for kids like 6 and up. Definitely not 5 and under. Maybe like 7 and up. Probably 6 and up. No, 7 and up. No, 6 and up. Either 6 or 7 and up. I definitely wouldn't recommend it.
Depends on the 6 or 7 year old.
A 5 year old would not be interested. Mm-mm. That would not go down well if you read that to a 5 year old.
Don't do it.
Yep.
What about an adult? Do you think I'd like it?
Yeah, maybe. Add that to your read. Not add that to your read. I don't know where my tongue is right now. Okay. Maybe you should add that to your to read list. Yeah.
Perhaps.
You don't have to talk
I slow. Will.
I'm only talking slow because if I talk my normal speed, I'm like, yeah, yeah. 7 plus 9 equals 2.
That's not correct.
I know that. Exactly. I mean, like, my words are all jumbled up. It's supposed to be something completely different. 1 plus 1 equals 2.
9 minus 7 equals 2.
Or 2 plus 2 equals 4.
You have the numbers right, just in the wrong order.
They are 8 plus 8 equals 16, or 60 plus 16 equals 32, and 32 plus 32 is 64, and 64 plus 64 equals 128, and 128 plus 128 equals 256
more.
And 200.
That's when I give up.
56 plus, okay, I'm gonna stop there. I'm never in my life.
You're getting a round of
my doubles.
Applause.
Woo, I'm on fire.
Got a job. I don't have to say that you are really good at math.
True.
I saw the
animation. Thanks for sharing your book. I hope you get to read the sequels.
I am really excited to. I saw like a little sneak peek that they sometimes give you of the next book. The next book is Spy Camp, which sounds really fun. The next is Evil Spy School, which sounds even more interesting. Like, evil. I have no clue what's going to go on in that book.
No clue. Oh, we're up to Fatia. Fatia, what do you have to share with us today?
Okay, I have a really good book to share, but there's no, like, reading. It's just pages. Just like the book that Santa gave me. I didn't actually make a list because I forgot.
Yeah, it's all pictures. Wonderful, beautiful
all pictures. By what incredible artist?
This book is not
by who?
It's Fatia's books by Fatia Jeanette. I made it. And you can like see that I put a really big rainbow because I wanted to this book to make it really cool. And I'm going to send it to Miss Emily.
Very cool.
You like this
one. So what are, can you tell us about some of the pictures? And remember, we want to make sure our radio listeners can really imagine these pictures in their heads, so we have to describe them.
That's page one. Like, you can imagine that you're living in a unicorn world. That sounds amazing.
Living in a unicorn world? What's a unicorn world like?
That does.
Oh, just unicorns about unicorns, I think. And the unicorn book and rainbow.
Are there more unicorns or more humans in the unicorn world?
All humans and unicorns and princesses and queens.
What kind of art supplies did you use to make your book?
I used markers, my pencils, my pens. I'm going to show you a really cool page over here. Let's find it. Where is it?
Yeah, you can show the, how people dress up in the unicorn world.
Oh, yeah. This is how the people just disguised as unicorns. The unicorns are
they disguise themselves as unicorns? By wearing pointy hats?
This is a real cat. Cool. This is a real cat girl.
She can actually talk.
Yeah.
She can talk in, like, cat language or in human language?
Human language.
Can she talk in cat language, too?
Yeah. Okay, I'm going to show you.
It sounds like a cool world.
But she's actually disguised as something.
What's she disguised as?
She's actually disguised as a fairy queen, but she's actually really powerful, but she's actually disguised like, she's actually really like this.
Why is she disguised?
Well, because she doesn't want to like tell her secret to anyone, because she's actually a Mickey Mouse girl that no one knows about.
Fascinating.
The outer space princess.
There's a lot of princesses in Unicorn World. Do they get along?
Yeah, they're actually all friends. Some of them, yeah. This might be kind of silly. This is a princess clown. Oh.
There's so many princesses.
This is amazing.
Yeah, it's Princess World. I mean, I know it's Unicorn World, but it's also Princess World.
Yeah, and also like
very cool.
They are in disguise because they eat fruits and vegetable, so that's why they are superheroes. So that's their secret. So that's why they don't want to tell.
I eat fruits and vegetables. Am I a superhero?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Right.
Yeah, that's funny. Eating fruits and vegetables is cool.
Yeah.
Fatia, I know you make a lot of books and you draw a lot. Do you have any suggestions for our listeners who want to create a book on like how to get started?
Yes. So first you have to like get a clear book, by the way, and then you have to save form, by the way, and then you have to write the titles, then draw the pictures, and then at the end, like you can make a copy of that, copies and copies and copies. You can do more if you want. You can do dirty. Oh, if I knew, maybe faster bit than that. I don't know how much books I made. I didn't even count.
Do you keep them all in one spot? Or are they all over the house?
In my top drawer.
New top drawer. Very cool. Someday you might need a new drawer. Well, thanks for sharing your book. So this week I wanted to mention two books that are out this month. One has already come out and one is soon to come out. And both of them are books for young readers, and they're both nonfiction books that were originally books for adults, but there's now a youth version, like a young readers edition. So the first one is Becoming by Michelle Obama, which is a very popular biography for adults, but there's now a young readers version. And I will read the description for that. Michelle Robinson was born on the South Side of Chicago. From her modest beginning, she would become Michelle Obama, the inspiring and powerful First Lady of the United States, when her husband, Barack Obama, was elected the 44th president. They would be the first Black first family in the White House and serve the country for two terms. Growing up, Michelle and her older brother, Craig, shared a bedroom in their family's upstairs apartment in her great aunt's house.
Her parents, Fraser and Marion, poured their love and energy into their children. Michelle's beloved dad taught his kids to work hard, keep their word, and remember to laugh. Her mom showed them how to think for themselves, use their voice, and be unafraid. But life soon took her far from home. With determination, carefully made plans, and the desire to achieve, Michelle was eager to expand the sphere of her life from her schooling in Chicago. She went to Princeton University, where she learned what it felt like to be the only Black woman in the room. She then went to Harvard Law School, and after graduating, returned to Chicago and became a high-powered lawyer. Her plans changed, however, when she met and fell in love with Barack Obama. From her early years of marriage and the struggle to balance being a working woman, a wife, and the mom of two daughters, Michelle Obama details the shift she made to political life and what her family endured as a result of her husband's fast-moving political career and campaign for the presidency. She shares the glamour of ball gowns and world travel and the difficulties of comforting families after tragedies. She managed to be there for her daughter's swim competitions and attend plays at their schools without catching the spotlight, while defining and championing numerous initiatives, especially those geared towards kids, during her time as First Lady. Most important, this volume for young people is an honest and fascinating account of Michelle Obama's life, led by example. She shares her views on how all young people can help themselves as well as help others, no matter their status in life. She asks readers to realize that no one is perfect and the process of becoming is what matters, as finding yourself is ever evolving. In telling her story with boldness, she asks young readers, who are you and what do you want to become? So that is Becoming, adapted for young readers by Michelle Obama. I'm always curious with the young reader editions, like how much is changed and what the process is to make that adaptation. Because the original book is a pretty big book. Very popular.
I just read that book.
You did?
Yeah, on Epic Books.
Very cool. What did you learn about her?
I learned about that she got married and she had a brother and she lived on her aunt's house. And some other things that I forgot.
Yeah, that's okay. But you liked it?
Yeah, so.
Yeah, so that one came out earlier this month. And the other book that I wanted to share, which is also a nonfiction adaptation for young adults, is coming out March 16th. And it's called Can't Stop, Won't Stop, A Hip Hop History by Jeff Chang and Dave Cook. And here's the description. From award-winning author Jeff Chang, Can't Stop, Won't Stop is the story of hip hop, a generation-defining movement, and the music that transformed American politics and culture forever. Hip-hop is one of the most dominant and influential cultures in America, giving new voice to the younger generation. It defines a generation's worldview. Exploring hip-hop's beginnings up to the present day, Jeff Chang and Davey D. Cook provide a provocative look into the new world that the hip-hop generation has created. Based on original interviews with DJs, B-boys, rappers, activists, and gang members, with unforgettable portraits of many of hip-hop's forebears, founders, mavericks, and present-day icons, this book chronicles the epic events, ideas, and the music that marked the hip-hop generation's rise. So that's Can't Stop, Won't Stop by Jeff Chang and Davey D. Cook. I'm curious with this one, because the original book came out a really long time ago. So Michelle Obama's book is maybe a few years old, but it's pretty new still. Whereas Can't Stop, Won't Stop, the original version for adults, was out quite a while ago. So I'm curious if they've updated.
How long ago?
Let me look. It looks like it maybe came out in maybe 2005. It's not totally clear on this.
Not that long ago. It's just very long. If they're gonna like do a youth version, but it's not that long ago in the grand scheme of time.
Not in the grand scheme of time, but in, I think when covering hip hop and its impact on culture, like how much of an impact it's had in the past 16 years is probably quite a bit.
Definitely.
And there's a lot of new rappers and DJs. And so I'm curious if they added anything to it or if they did like an update kind of chapter. So I'll have to see when that comes out. But yeah, those are two
books that were very popular nonfiction books, one more recent than the other, that now have young readers editions. Hooray! But now I have to decide, because I actually haven't read the originals for either of those books. I've always wanted to. I'm like, do I read the adult version or the youth version?
Probably you should first read the adult version and then the youth.
Yeah, I just don't know if I want to commit to reading both, because it's sort of like reading the same book but with slightly different wording. I don't know. Yeah, so I think I might read Michelle Obama's book, the adult version, because actually our library book club is reading that, as one of our library book clubs is reading that for their March pick. So maybe I'll try to read that,
you know,
so that I can take part in that discussion.
It'd be surprising if the library didn't have Spy School. Not saying I'm positive, it's just I'm pretty sure I saw it while I was browsing around the kids area, but I might just be like remembering something different.
I mean, I'm definitely familiar with it, but let's see.
Oh, have you read it?
No. When you were talking about it, I could picture the cover. It does not look like we have it. I'll have to get that one. But you can borrow it through the library. We just don't have it on our shelves. But yeah, there's a bunch of them. There's Spy School, Spy Camp, Spy School, Secret Service, Evil Spy School, Spy School Goes South, Spy Ski School, Spy School Revolution.
Wait, I thought there were only three Spy books School. In the series.
No, there's a ton. Spy School British Invasion.
Is that like 10?
Is that
15 or Spy School British Invasion?
British
what
Invasion.
The heck? What? Spy School British Invasion? Boy.
I like a Spy Ski School. That title's funny.
Spy Ski School?
Mm-hmm.
What the heck?
Yeah. I'll read you the description. Ben Ripley enrolls in ski school, where the slopes and the stakes get really steep, in this follow-up to the Edgar Award-nominated Spy School, Spy Camp, and Evil Spy School. 13-year-old Ben Ripley is not exactly the best student Spy School has ever seen. He keeps flunking advanced self-preservation. Oh, no. But outside of class, Ben is pretty great at staying alive. His enemies have kidnapped him, shot at him, locked him in a room with a ticking time bomb, and even tried to blow him up with missiles. And he survived every time. After all that unexpected success, the CIA has decided to activate Ben for real. The mission? Become friends with Jessica Shang, the daughter of a suspected Chinese crime boss, and find out all of her father's secrets. Jessica wants to go to ski school in the Rocky Mountains, so a select few spy school students are going skiing too. Undercover, of course. Ben might not be able to handle a weapon or a pair of skis, but he can make friends easy peasy. That is, until his best friend from home drops in on the trip and jeopardizes the entire mission. Spy ski school?
Drops him.
I don't know.
Drops.
You'll have to read to find out.
He doesn't want to be friends anymore, or he just drops Ben off of a cliff.
No, it sounds like his friend isn't on the trip, and his friend all of a sudden is there. He drops in. Plop.
Jackson? Oh, I thought his friend was Mike.
I don't know. It doesn't mention the name. But it sounds like there's two other books before this one. Or at least two others.
Spy Camp and...
And Evil Spy School. So, we're actually out of time for today. We're going to have to wrap up our thrilling spy conversation to say goodbye to our listeners. But we hope everybody out there listening has a really great week with lots of quality reading time. And we'll be back next week to talk about some more books.
Bye-bye.
Happy reading.
New rules are now in place that should help New York meet its clean energy goals by speeding up the process of siting large-scale wind and solar projects. It's been less than a year since a law was passed requiring new streamlined rules for permitting and operating conditions of clean energy projects that generate 25 megawatts or more. Under the Climate Leadership and Community Protection Act, the state must get 70% of its energy from renewable sources by 2030. But Ann Reynolds, who heads the Alliance for Clean Energy New York, points out that under the old rules, it could take 5 to 10 years just for projects to get the permits to begin construction.
These new rules will really help get projects reviewed and permitted faster. They create uniform standards so the developers know what rules they have to abide by, and the towns would know too.
She adds the wind and solar projects are also expected to create tens of thousands of new good-paying jobs and new tax revenue for the state. Reynolds says three wind projects that were in the process of getting permits under the old rules may switch to the new rules, and many more projects are on the way.
I would say there's maybe another 25 solar projects that are proposed all over the state that would be going through this new process.
She estimates completing current projects will put the state about halfway toward meeting its clean energy goals. The rule reforms were mandated by the Accelerated Renewable Energy Growth and Community Benefit Act that was passed as part of the state budget last year. Reynolds commends state officials for quickly completing that process.
The fact that New York State, in a pandemic, got these new rules out in under a year really demonstrates that they're committed to this type of economic development and this type of pollution-free power.
For New York News Connection, I'm Andrea Sears.
Tune in Monday, March 8th to the WGXC Morning Show, where we'll have the WGXC Congressional Report reporting on what votes and actions Representatives Paul Tonko and Antonio Delgado took in the past week. We'll also hear from the Columbia County Sanctuary Movement as they talk about possible bills in Albany, and from the Rip Van Winkle Amateur Radio Society, who speaks with our friends at the Catskill Makers Syndicate. On the WGXC Morning Show, Monday, March 8th, 9 to 11 a.m., on WGXC 90.7 FM.
With COVID vaccines becoming more widely available, many more people are searching for the earliest possible appointment to get vaccinated, and there's a tool to help them find it. The COVID-19 Vaccine Resource Locator is an online tool to help anyone link to public vaccination resources available through both state and local health departments and retail pharmacies by zip code. According to Dr. Donald Stangler with United Healthcare, the information on the free website is updated twice a day and available in both English and Spanish for anyone to use.
This is a rapidly evolving science. It's really important to understand what the criteria are, whether you are a candidate to be vaccinated, where to go, and how to set up an appointment.
So far, more than 100,000 people have used the vaccine resource tool. It's on the web at uhc.com/vaccine locator. Finding the nearest location can do more than save time. Last month, when Ann Barshaw, a cancer patient living in Tarrytown, became eligible to get vaccinated, the earliest appointment she could find was a 6-hour drive away.
I took an appointment on the 16th and I drove up there. And it really wasn't that bad on the way up, but on the way back, I ended up with a blizzard.
She says the return trip took 7 hours, and she'll have to go back for the second shot. With the approval of the Johnson & Johnson one-shot vaccine, there are now 3 options and a growing supply of vaccinations. Stangler emphasizes that knowing when and where they are available is critical to bringing the COVID pandemic crisis under control.
I think they all provide excellent protection against getting bad complications and being hospitalized. So if the opportunity is there, my recommendation is you should jump on it as soon as possible.
For New York News Connection, I'm Andrea Sears.
Next, we have an interview from
WOOC.
To learn more about this program, the Sanctuary for Independent Media, visit us online at mediasanctuary.org.
On March 3rd, the Start Smart New York Coalition, Drug Policy Alliance, and other allies held a statewide day of action for marijuana justice, calling on the legislature and Governor Cuomo to legalize cannabis by passing the Marijuana Regulation and Taxation Act. We hear first from Jawanza Williams, Organizing Director of Vocal New York.
And I just want to thank everybody for being here this morning as we, you know, launch into this final stretch to really push to legalize marijuana across New York State, to create a new industry, but not just to legalize for the sake of legalization, but to legalize marijuana and chart a path forward for how do we really implement new policy that responds to the realities of racist prohibition, that reinvests, that restores the harms. Like, how do we make policy that is, you know, increasingly anti-racist, of class conscious and gender expansive. And that's why we're here today to talk about the Marijuana Regulation and Taxation Act. Governor Cuomo's legalization bill, the CRTA, still falls short in many ways. You know, we maintain that the Marijuana Regulation and Taxation Act is the gold standard for legalization with racial justice, social equity, and economic justice, and community reinvestment at the core. And we are urging the legislature to pass the MRTA immediately. That's held by Liz Krueger, Assembly Majority Leader Crystal Peoples-Stokes. You know, and given that New Jersey is recently passed legalization and is establishing an adult use market just next door to New York, you know, us at the Start Smart New York Coalition and, you know, allies across all across New York State, we're really calling for swift passage. You know, this is an opportunity and a time for us to really get this right. You know, the MRTA, it can secure new jobs, it secures justice and equity for millions of New Yorkers and restitution for New York communities most harmed by the war on drugs. I want to introduce our first speaker. I'm going to go to Kumar Rao from the Working Families Party.
As Jawanza mentioned, just recently, our neighboring state in New Jersey signed its marijuana legalization bill into law. It's well past time for New York to follow suit and correct decades of harm to Black and other communities of color disproportionately impacted by the criminalization of marijuana. But we can't legalize marijuana in a way that doesn't address and reverse those harms. We can't legalize marijuana in a way that doesn't invest in communities targeted by criminalization. That's why the Working Families Party strongly supports efforts to pass the MRTA this year. I'm a former public defender in New York City, so I certainly know how horrible marijuana prosecutions were in this state. Simple marijuana possession was long one of the top misdemeanor arrests in New York, and for decades harmed Black and Brown people, families, and whole communities. As our party State Director Sochi Nemeka and DPA's Executive Director Cassandra Frederick shared in a recent op-ed, and I'm just going to quote it, what they wrote was that adult use marijuana regulation must address the harms wrought by the decades-long war on drugs. Treating this as an issue of both economic justice and criminal justice reform, New York must use any legalization proposal as a vehicle to right the wrongs of the past and build the foundations for a more equitable future. Now, we know Governor Cuomo included marijuana legalization in this year's budget proposal, but the plan falls well short. In addition to not including real community-led reinvestment, his legalization plans include many provisions that will continue to criminalize communities. So we need the MRTA. We need it passed immediately. Last year, millions of New Yorkers across our state took to the streets and to the ballot box calling for an end to structural anti-Black racism and a demand for real racial justice. So the New York legislature and this governor both have a mandate and obligation to advance racial and economic justice legislation this term.
And, you know, the campaign to legalize the Marijuana Regulation and Taxation Act really gets us, you know, closer to building an equitable system for all people across New York State. But, you know, we really got to start at the center of the people most harmed. And I think that our next speaker will be able to help us really understand that. So our next speaker is going to be Yusuf Abdul-Qadir, the Senior Strategist for Racial Justice at the New York Civil Liberties Union.
This is my third year doing this. And as we say, third time's a charm. The people pushed for 2 years ago for the Democrats to take control over the state Senate. And now it's time. It's been time. And we often talk about this issue centering around the war on drugs. And we use the language of the war on drugs as a failed war, except it's not. It has succeeded efficiently at achieving the goals that it was set out to do, to ensure that we criminalize Black and Brown and poor communities across New York State. I am sitting here with you all today in Syracuse, New York, because we have to be clear, this is not just a downstate issue. This is not just a New York City issue. This is not just an issue that affects the five boroughs. I'm originally from the Bronx. It did not just affect the Bronx. This war on drugs, this devastating trauma to Black and Brown communities affected and is still affecting today communities in the city of Syracuse, communities like the city communities in Rochester and in Buffalo, communities like Utica and urban, rural, and suburban communities. This policy is destroying lives of Black and Brown communities for decades across the entire state of New York. Decriminalization was an important effort to move this issue forward, but it is not enough. We are still seeing pretextual searches being done of individuals. Officers saying, we have to stop you because we smell marijuana in your vehicle. Whether they do or don't, it's irrespective to the fact that this is used as an opportunity to entrench people into the criminal legal system. It's a part of a series of policies and practices that build an ecosystem to continue to maintain a racial caste system wrought upon the backs of Black and brown people across the state of New York. The governor's bill is not adequate. The governor's bill is not adequate. Kumar Jawanza spoke to many of the reasons why, but let me take it a little further as to why it's not just important for us to decriminalize or to legalize, but to ensure that we have justice at the center of this issue. The MRTA has stronger social equity and community reinvestment components and provisions than the governor's bill. This is important because it's not just essential that we are able to tax this area and get new revenue streams and be able to allocate this to whatever fund the governor may choose. It's about making sure that the communities that have been devastated, that these communities that have been devastated by the war on drugs, that they are getting some reparatory justice, and that we're restoring those communities back to the damage that was wrought against them, and that we are specifically and exclusively reinvesting in those communities. That is at the core of what the MRTA does, that the governor's bill does not. It's essential for us to address the records of people who have been convicted of marijuana by making sure that the people who were funneled into the school-to-prison pipeline and who were funneled into the drug trade and who were put into the carceral state for selling dime bags on the corner because they were given little to no other opportunity or recourse are able to take those entrepreneurial skills and benefit from this industry.
Once again, Jawanza Williams.
And, you know, I just want to point out before I take us to our next speaker, some of the ways, the concrete ways that Governor Cuomo's CRTA bill still fails in comparison to the MRTA. One, it leaves many criminal penalties. It does not prohibit police from using odor to justify stops and searches. Does not provide for automatic expungement of past convictions. It does not address collateral consequences. Specifically, does not have relief for immigrants or child welfare. It does not have actual community-led reinvestment with lockboxes for funds. Governance structure of the Office of Cannabis Management makes it beholden to Governor Cuomo. Equity and accountability is not strong enough. Still no home cultivation. There's still no on-site consumption licenses, which is a big issue for people that live in public housing. So, you know, really the crux of what we're trying to illustrate here is that the Governor Cuomo's legalization proposal, it does not operate from the same framework that is anti-racist, that is class conscious, that is gender expansive, that is trying to really a paradigm shift, how we're going to build a new industry that is equitable, an industry that accounts for the realities of racist prohibition. For the decades that this has happened across New York State, as Yusuf reminds us, this is not just a New York City, not just a Bronx, not just a Brooklyn issue, but this is an issue for all New Yorkers, in particular for Black, brown, and poor people. And we need to be building the kind of industry that is actually going to respond to that lived reality. So our next speaker I want to bring up is Orlando Dixon from Partnership for the Public Good.
So thank you for having me. I really appreciate this opportunity to speak about like the Western New York and Erie County perspective. For a state that's like decriminalized marijuana years ago, it's shocking how many people still or arrested for possessing it. Over like 5 years, I think we did a study from like 2012 to 2016, there was like 2,700 people and arrested for simple possession. And the CRTA still arrests people for simple possession. And that's one of the huge issues that I have with the CRTA.
This has been Mark Dunley for the Hudson Mohawk Radio Network.
On Friday, March 5th, there was a day of action across New York State to bring COVID-19 financial aid to excluded New Yorkers. Rallies and marches were held in Albany, Hudson, Kingston, New York City, and Syracuse to urge state leaders to provide cash assistance to immigrant New York families excluded from all federal COVID relief efforts. Hudson Mohawk Magazine attended an event in Hudson, New York, organized by Columbia County Sanctuary Movement. Surrounded by boxes filled with food that were being prepared to be delivered to families in need, Brian McCormick of Columbia County Sanctuary Movement introduced speakers one by one.
So thank you all for joining us here today. We are a diverse and representative coalition of organizations who are demanding a worker bailout fund for excluded workers. We are here today to show that this is a statewide issue. There are excluded workers everywhere. They're in our restaurants, they're in our farms, and they're on the front line of this pandemic. Some people ask who are the excluded workers that we're talking about. The three main categories are undocumented folks, people who were recently released from incarceration and therefore don't have the job history to qualify for unemployment, as well as cash economy workers like folks in restaurants, street vendors, and domestic workers.
Speaking at the event were directly impacted people, coalition members, faith leaders, and elected officials.
My name is Oswaldo Ramirez, and I live in Hudson. And I have too many feelings right now. Like, my electrical bill is, like, very high right now, and I don't have enough water for. My rent is, like, every single time it's coming nonstop, and the pandemic is stopped to the workers. Like, you can work, you can do nothing to do. You don't have... it's very hard right now. And also, my family is like, I don't have enough support for him. I have my three kids, my wife, everything needs support right now.
My name is Jareen Ahmed. I'm speaking on behalf of Jobville Hudson. We are an organization that takes a stand against domestic and gender-based violence in our community. As millions of Americans were sent home from work and school due to the pandemic, many of us had the privilege to be safe and comfortable. But many others went home to violence and abuse that they were able to escape for hours in the day by either going to school or work. Domestic and gender-based violence has skyrocketed throughout the pandemic. Survivors of abuse continue to suffer at the hands of their abusers because financial dependency is preventing them from leaving. Excluded workers who are survivors need relief now. Excluded workers who are survivors need relief yesterday. We cannot keep turning away and excluding the poor, the hungry, and the huddled masses that we vowed as a nation to protect. New York State needs to act now. Let's get this done the right way and set an example for the entire nation to follow. Thank you.
Today, I would like to invite Quentin Cross, Senior Policy Advisor to the Hudson Catskill Housing Coalition, to share some words with us as well.
If you look around in these communities here and down in the inner cities of Hudson, you see the food pantries lines around the corner. People are in need. They are desperate. When you look at this housing crisis, you don't know where the tipping point is. You just know people are in need help. They can't pay their rent. They don't know where they're going day to day. They don't know what's going to happen. So this fund is needed now. We need the state to act now. We need our leaders to act now. We need a bailout now.
I'd like to invite Thomas Kearney, who is the Capital Region Organizer for the People's Campaign for Parole Justice.
Thank you. There's this idea that that prisoners aren't eligible for unemployment benefits because they haven't been working once they've been released. The incarcerated community is slaving on our behalf daily. When you walk through Walmart and you see those huge gallons of New York Clean hand sanitizer, that's made by the incarcerated community. For pennies, masks for us out here. They are supporting us out here, and they deserve the same support when they get released.
Pastor Marcelino Mexicano, he is the pastor of Centro Cristiano Renacer, and one of our CCSM members is going to be interpreting for him.
Son bendecidas alrededor de 80 familias.
About 80 families receive help from us.
Cada semana.
Every week.
En el año 2020.
in 2020.
Repartimos más de 180 mil libras de comida.
We gave out about 180,000 pounds of food to the community.
As Pastor Marcelino mentioned, as nonprofits, we're distributing a ton of food, and we're working with government partners locally. The next person that I'd like to invite up to speak is Michael Chimides. Michael is a county supervisor for Columbia County, representing Hudson's 3rd Ward.
This is a really special location. You can see with all the food being distributed, this is an important space for people to get what they need. But it's obviously, as you've heard, it's not enough. Is that, yes, we need to be distributing food so people have it, but food distribution isn't going to get us what we need. The pandemic spreads when people are forced to make unhealthy choices. So if you're going to work because you're sick and you have to go to work, that puts everybody at risk.